Outlander by Zeppelin Skies. Rating is explicit. Graphic depictions of violence. Category is female-male. Fandom is supernatural. Relationships, Dean Winchester / original female characters. Dean Winchester and Sam Winchester. Characters, Dean Winchester, original female characters. Original characters, Sam Winchester. Castiel, supernatural. Benny Lafitte, Jack Klein. Asmodeus, supernatural. Additional tags. Romance, drama, smut, angst, Western AU, Dean Winchester AU, Cowboy Dean, Protective Dean, Racial Elements, Blood and Violence, Chapter-Specific Tags, Historical References, Historical Fantasy. This is part 2 of the Honorable Choice series. Summary. Dean Winchester has been stripped of his military rank, but he is living happier with his new wife, trying to adjust to a new life in her tribe. What will it take for her people to accept him, especially when the battle for her heart might not be completely won? Author's note. Ready for some more Cowboy Dean? Here we go with Outlander Part 2. This is a sequel story directly following The Honorable Choice, where Dean not only saves the member of a Native American tribe, but falls in love with her. She saves him a lot in return. Now, he'll have to learn how to live in her world if he wants to stay with her. The sequel series will be 4 parts. Disclaimer. I first got inspired to write The Honorable Choice for Jackals vs. Bingo after a recent rewatch of Spirit, the Stallion of the Cimarron, with a tinge of Yellowstone in the mix. I've done a fair bit of research for this now ongoing series, both on the Native American Lakota tribe and on American history during this time in the late 1800s, also known as the Old West, during the American Indian Wars. Jackals vs. Bingo 24 prompt, Western AU. Tags/warnings, 18 plus only. Suggestiveness, implied smut and spice, hunting, in the more traditional sense, angst, hurt comfort, and romantic fluff. Part 1. Two Worlds. Her people call this river Little Cheyenne. It's because Big Cheyenne cuts through the land of the Sioux Indians by half, but Little Cheyenne almost meets it in the south, stretching all the way up to the Black Hills. Mila's tribe has always lived near this river. Its waters have bled red during battles with other tribes, and sometimes during battles with white men. The white men's fort, the one her husband came from, lies farther down in the south. The tribe had to move their village higher north along the river after Mila returned with Dean Winchester, just to be safe. On a cloudy afternoon, Mila scrubs at a bundle of dirty clothes until they're clean. She rinses them off in the river and is thorough about her work, but she knows she can't be here much longer. She has a stew simmering on hot coals in her teepee. Well, the one she now shares with her husband. Unconsciously, she smiles. She remembers leading Dean through the tribe, to the place where she hoped he would find rest. They stopped at the foot of her teepee.
"This one's yours?"
he asked. She paused, giving him another small smile. "Ours." Mila continues scrubbing, though she frowns when her fingers slip through a tear in one of the new tunics she made for him, even though he keeps calling it a shirt. The tear was made by a blade, or maybe an arrowhead, she realizes. The crunch of feet on the riverbed's gravel makes her raise her head and look over her shoulder. Unease prickles down her spine. She braces herself for a familiar shadow, come to disturb her peace. But then she relaxes. She's being joined by two of the older women in her tribe. Mila has known them her whole life, and she calls them Tunwin, Aunt. They both greet her kindly and kneel beside her with their own bundle of clothes for washing. But Iota, the older one, has a sharper eye. She is their tribe's medicine woman.
"Your husband wears out his clothes,"
she remarks. "He's been working hard training with Shota and the other men,"
Mila explains.
He seems to be learning quickly, says Misa. She has a more playful glint in her eyes. Who knew that you could catch and tame a white man? Looks like they are no different from wild horses.
Mila smiles slightly, but it's not genuine. She nods in agreement.
He's learning quickly. She holds her tongue from saying anything else, even though she wants to.
Dean isn't a man to be tamed, any more than she was, in his people's eyes.
She aims to change the subject. Do you have any good herbs or spices for Wahanpi? I've had the stew simmering all morning. She asks Iota. Not only is she a gifted healer, but Iota is also one of the best cooks, and she knows it. She nods and straightens her shoulders the way she always does when someone asks her for advice, and even when they don't ask for it.
Of course, child.
What you need is...
God damn it.
Dean huffs under his breath. The jackrabbit flees from him again, or more accurately, from his terribly aimed arrow. He's an excellent marksman, just not with a bow, it seems. He doesn't know what he's doing wrong here, and he's not likely to figure it out. Not by the way Takoda, Shota, and the other men are laughing at him. Dean resists the urge to roll his eyes. He knows when he's being hazed. These men are bare-chested warriors, each of them richly tanned under the sun. Most of them wear their hair long, half of it gathered high on their heads or braided in some way. Shota is his wife's cousin, and as the chief's son, he wears a small adornment of eagle feathers threaded into his hair. His closest friends are Takoda and Oktokte. Both of them laugh at Dean the most, and in their language, using just enough gestures and body language that Dean knows he's being talked about. They point at his boots and his brown Stetson hat, two of the only things he's kept of his own that make him feel comfortable in his own skin. Finally, Shota goes over to him.
Good try,
he says, in his usual patronizing tone. Dean knows he can't punch out Mila's cousin, no matter how bad he's asking for it. Somehow, Dean manages to hold onto his temper.
What are they saying?
He asks lowly, gesturing at the two Chuckle Brothers. Shota's lips twitch. He glances down at Dean's feet.
They say your shoes are allowed on the earth. You give yourself away before the animal even catches your scent.
Dean's given up a lot of things, but his boots won't be one of them. He wants to learn. He wants to belong here in Mila's world, but he also wants to stay himself. So the men move on, mounting their horses. Dean rides with Baby at a plodding clip. Her black coat ripples with a healthy sheen. He thinks she's come to enjoy the more natural surroundings and freer pasture of the grasslands, and he can't deny this part of it all feels right. The sun peeks through between the dappled leaves of oak trees, painting the ground in red, green, and gold. It's quiet and beautiful here, as Shota leads the pack through the forest, just southwest of the village. Eventually, he stops them between a denser thatch of trees and shrub. He raises a hand signal that Dean's come to recognize. He raises his bow belatedly after the others, though. He follows Shota's line of vision, and there is a deer grazing in a small clearing, a young buck. Shota signals at Dean. Try again, his eyes say. Dean takes in a deep, quiet breath through his nose, and he takes aim. He really misses his damn rifle. Dean shoulders the sting of failure while he makes his way through the camp, leading Baby by the reins. He drops her off at the large horse pen. There, he feeds her and brushes her long coat, all while murmuring soft, affectionate things. She's still one of his only friends here. But even she leaves him short to join her new friend, Mato. The two have become thick as thieves. Mato greets the black mare with a friendly whinny. Their noses touch in affection, and Mato playfully nips at her ear. Dean raises his brows.
Well, that's a little more friendly than usual. You guys start courting when I wasn't looking?
He walks over to Mato, who's softened up to him in recent weeks.
You sly dog, Dean remarks, smirking. Didn't even ask me for her hand.
Mato blows a hot breath through his nose at Dean, who has to blink, wiping his face.
Now, that's just rude.
Still, he offers the Mustang an apple from his pocket. Mato takes it from his palm, letting Dean rub his neck while he munches on his snack.
As fathers-in-law go, you lucked out, pal. See? I'm a delight.
He wouldn't be surprised if Baby had her first foal by spring. Dean grins at the thought, but it soon falls. If only his father-in-law were so easy to please. His mind dwells on it as he starts making his way back to the heart of the village. Chetan, Mila's father, hasn't warmed up to him any better than Shota or the other men. Tahatan is the only one of them who treats Dean civilly, and overall, he seems to be a good leader. Dean has that thought just when he sees the older man himself walking with a woman Dean sort of recognizes. She wears a long necklace made of blue beads and seashells. Tahatan goes into her teepee, even though Dean knows that woman isn't the chief's wife. Dean raises his brows, but he subtly pivots on his heel and takes a different route back to his own teepee. Whatever he just saw, it's definitely not his business.
Honey, I'm home.
He teases. She welcomes him into her arms, her hands traveling warmly up his shoulders. He bends to kiss her, soft and slow at first, and then deeper, sucking on her lower lip and teasing her with a sensuous tongue. She hums in surprise into his mouth, making him smile. He's exhausted and feeling low, but he doesn't want to let on to her. He just wants to forget about this day and hopefully recharge with a better night. How did it go today? She asks after he allows her to breathe. Dean nods and lies. Pretty good. She waits for him to continue. When he just continues to hold her, she raises her brows up at him. Dean?
What? I'm working on archery. Lots of progress.
She eyes him in suspicion, and he knows he doesn't have her fooled. Actually, she looks like she's going to press him about it, so he releases her from his hold and goes to change out of his dirty clothes to avoid her gaze.
Hey, maybe it's none of my business, but I saw the chief go into some other woman's tent today. Holding hands, bedroom eyes, the whole deal.
He says while he changes. He glances back at her and waggles his brows. Mila smiles slightly. Did she wear her hair in a half braid? Or did she wear a necklace made of seashells? She asks. Dean's surprised that she doesn't seem surprised, but he thinks back to what he saw.
Seashells? Yeah, she wore seashells.
He says. Mila nods. Yes, that woman is also his. The chiefs of my people are known to take more than one wife. At that, Dean becomes even more surprised. He finishes dressing and leaves his boots by the teepee's entrance, his raised brows even out into a smirk.
Well, okay. Guess it's good to be the chief.
He says. Mila's lips purse as she eyes him narrowly. She goes back to stirring the stew with a wide wooden spoon. Dean doesn't see her reaction, but he does notice that something's missing from his side of the bedding. He frowns.
Hey, where's my gun?
He asks Mila, who shakes her head without looking at him. I moved it, she curtly replies. Dean's frown deepens. He touches her arm to get her attention.
I'd rather you didn't do that, baby.
He says. He's made sure that she knows the basics of a gun well enough, but he doesn't want to take the chance of her hurting herself. Don't leave it out then, she snips back. It shouldn't go where we sleep. Dean tilts his head at her. He's a bit confused at her tone, especially because they've had this conversation before.
I have it there just in case something happens at night.
He reminds her. His pistol is really just for emergencies, though. There are only 3 bullets left in it, and he can't exactly go shopping for more. Dean realizes then that Mila's mood has shifted. He approaches her from behind.
What's wrong, huh?
His hands find familiar purchase along the curve of her waist. He swipes her braid away and presses a kiss where her neck meets her shoulder. More teasingly, he asks,
"What I do now?"
Mila remains tight-lipped until she glances at him over her shoulder. "Do you want another woman?" she asks. It's a simple question, but it succeeds in completely tripping him up. He blinks at her, incredulous and bewildered.
"What?"
She continues shredding another herb to put into the stew. Somehow, it makes the broth smell a bit worse. "You seem to admire the chief for having 3 wives, so you must want another one too," she says.
Holy shit, 3 wives?
Dean wonders.
The man must be a saint. Look at the hell I'm catching with 1.
He can't help but laugh, a deep belly chuckle that does nothing to take away Mila's ire. She glares at him now, genuinely upset, and Dean knows he's starting to shit the bed on this one. He sobers up and raises his hands in surrender.
"Sweetheart,"
he says in a placating tone. Despite her annoyance, she allows him to hold her again. He plies her with more tantalizing kisses along her neck. He breathes in the sweet-smelling oil she uses on her hair.
"You're more than enough woman for me. You know that, right?"
he whispers against her skin. It earns her slight shudder, and he smiles. He teases the spot just under her ear, grazing with his teeth, then soothing with his tongue. She can't help but writhe against him a bit. It stirs a well of desire in his lower belly, especially when he squeezes her hips, pressing himself to her from behind. She tries to remain strong as she clears her throat, no doubt feeling his growing hardness against her. She starts to blush hotly.
"It's all I can do just to make sure you stay sweet for me,"
Dean says, a hint of teasing returned to his voice. Mila finally breaks into a laugh. She reaches back to swat him on the head, but his ministrations work. Once she manages to escape from his grasp with a teasing smile of her own, she more happily serves him a bowl of stew. Dean smirks.
"Fine.
He can be patient. He'll just have to wait until dessert then." After a moment to calm himself, he sits down on the ground beside her and brings a large spoonful of stew to his lips. There, he pauses. The strange taste that assaults his tongue nearly makes him choke, but he does his best to swallow it down.
"The meat's tough as nails, for Christ's sake."
Hearing a spoon clatter against the bowl, he chances glancing at Mila. She sits stock still, her brows furrowed as she frowns. Slowly, she sets the bowl down and says, "Stop eating." She looks angry at herself. Dean feels bad for her, his sympathy striking at his chest.
"What do you mean? I'm hungry,"
he says, and gamely takes another couple of bites. She just watches him. Her upset worsens while he tries and fails to cover up a hacking cough. Finally, Mila can stand no more. She takes the bowl from him, making some of the foul broth slosh over their hands and onto the ground. She tried to make wahanpi, one of the most basic soups in her people's culture, made from bison, potatoes, corn, and carrots stewed in the broth. "Iota told me it was simple," she thinks in dismay. "How did it go so wrong?" "It's no good," she says, her voice hard. "I will go to my mother and see what she cooked. She may have extra for us." She rises to her feet, and Dean quickly follows her. He catches sight of her tears, even though she turns her face away from him to grab her shoes. He reaches out and stops her with a hand on her arm. He tugs her back to face him.
"Hey, it's okay. Why are you getting so upset?"
he says.
"I'm not picky. I'll eat whatever you make. Or maybe next time I'll try doing the cooking,"
he thinks. "Because," she blurts. Tears well up in her eyes and begin to slip down her cheeks, no matter how much she tries to brush them away. Because you shouldn't have to eat it. Because it should be good. You deserve to eat something good.
Neela finally realizes why her mother tried so hard to teach her these things. She's embarrassed, feeling sorry for herself, but it's also far worse than that. Her heart hurts knowing what Dean has gone through, and what he continues to go through for her sake. The least she could do is make sure he eats well, and it seems she can't even do that.
Neela,
he says with a sigh. He guides her into his embrace.
It's okay, sweetheart.
She can't allow herself to be comforted. She pushes at his chest to look up at him. You think I don't know what happens outside? She says. It's a small village, and people talk when they think I'm not listening. I know what the men are doing to you. Dean shakes his head stubbornly.
It's fine. I can handle it.
You should not have to, she insists, resting a hand over his heart. You've proven yourself to be a man of honor. Tahattin said it himself. They should not be this way.
Dean smiles ruefully. I can handle it.
He bows his head and captures her lips, plying her with a deeper kiss. The heat of it grows and becomes more than a distraction, more than comfort. It strips everything else away, until it's just the two of them again. Like the night she found him at the riverbank and held him until he woke up in her arms. What they eat doesn't matter. Other people don't matter. All that matters is this. He squeezes her hips and presses her harder against him so she can feel every part of his desire. She moans into his mouth, curling her fingers into his shirt. So he guides her down to the bedding, where he shows her what he'd rather get a taste of. Later that evening, Neela and Dean have dinner with her parents. Her mother, Wiea, is a gracious host, treating Dean both like a guest and a proper son-in-law. She gives him a special cut of braised bison meat, not to mention extra corn and potato hash. Chetan says nothing to him and eats in gruff, stoic silence. Dean can tell it both hurts and annoys his wife, but he has to focus on answering Wiea's many questions about his life, mainly about his family and the farm he grew up on. In some ways, raising crops and rearing up cows, chickens, and horses isn't so different from the Lakota village.
You must miss that place. Your home, she says.
Dean meets his mother-in-law's eyes, pausing and polishing off the meat sauce on his plate with a piece of bread. Chetan looks up from his meal, and so does Neela, who hesitates too. He sees the thread of her concern there, behind her eyes, so Dean hides the stab of sadness that hits him every time he thinks of Lawrence.
Sometimes,
he admits. He looks over at Neela.
But I'm not alone. That's what matters.
She smiles at him softly. Dean has the urge to take her hand, maybe raise it up to his lips, but he'll leave that for when they're alone. He doesn't want to upset her father any more than he has just by sitting in Chatan's house.
Tent, whatever.
He's glad when, after almost another hour and a round of hot tea, Neela finishes chatting with her mother and stands. It means they can finally get the hell out of here. No disrespect to her parents, but with so much change happening so quickly, Dean had been able to put Lawrence out of his mind for a while. Tonight he thinks about his mom and his brother, more than makes him comfortable on their way through the village. He follows Neela inside their teepee, then starts up a candle while she gets ready to rest for the evening. Living here is like going back in time, before the lantern, before indoor plumbing and the water heater. It's not a huge hardship for Dean, who spent a lot of his life sleeping on hard, dusty ground, or military bases with less than most modern amenities, but it's still another adjustment. He undresses down to his pants and settles down to the bedding and furs, waiting for his wife. She kneels beside him after undressing down to just her shift. He lays on his back with an arm tucked behind his head, and he watches her unbind her long, dark hair, undoing the braid from the bottom strands. She has this concentrated look on her face,
like her mind is far away, even though she's right here next to him. He threads his fingers through her loose hair while she works, giving her a smile.
You okay?
He asks. Mila pauses. She lets her tresses escape from her fingers and reaches for him, laying her hand on his chest. Dean holds it there and finally allows himself to press a kiss into her palm. I'm sorry, is what she wants to say. But she knows he'll only reply,
for what?
So she lowers down and slips into his warm embrace, as if this can make them both forget the day. She rests her cheek over his beating heart. You will never be alone. She promises. Dean quirks a smile. Instead of answering, he brushes her cheek tenderly with his hand, and he closes his eyes. A few deep breaths later, and he finds sleep. The candle slowly flickers out. On most nights, Mila falls asleep before Dean, and so his light snores don't bother her. Tonight, even though she's tired, she can't tune out his rumbles. Or maybe it's her own mind she can't tune out. She carefully maneuvers out of his hold and slips on her shoes. Maybe the moon will give her clarity tonight. She pushes open the front flap of the tent and steps out into the cooler air. She looks up at the moon's white-blue glow, a wide crescent peeking out from between two large clouds. A strong breeze tugs at her hair and flutters her lashes when she closes her eyes. She crosses her arms when goosebumps spread across her tan skin.
What troubles you, Kimamila?
The voice is steady and male, and all too familiar. Still, the intrusion startles her. Her eyes fly open wide and she jolts, inhaling sharply. She frowns when she realizes it's him. What are you doing? It's late, she says. He steps out from the shadows with his pipe in hand. He smells strongly of tobacco. Her father and uncle smoke as well, but she doesn't like it herself. She's glad Dean doesn't either.
Easing my mind,
he says, raising his pipe.
I see you're up to the same thing.
Mila shakes her head. She returns her attention to the moon. Go. You shouldn't be here.
Are we not friends, Mila?
He says.
Can't we talk and share like we used to?
His voice is disheartened enough that it earns her gaze. She sighs at him. I am sorry, but I can't give you what you want, she says. Don't test me anymore. He pauses with his pipe in hand. It drops to his side, and he takes measured steps closer until he's looking down at her. Even with the litheness of his form, he's still taller and broader than her. His long, dark hair is half pulled onto the top of his head, threaded together with a beaded leather string she made for him when they were children. He has used it ever since. The rest of his hair lays loose down his back, brushing his arms.
If you actually loved him, it wouldn't be a test.
He teases. He tries to touch her cheek, but she guides his hand down. She shakes her head and steps away from him. This isn't a game, she says. You know I mean what I say. His anger and frustration surfaces with a sharp exhale of breath and the crunch of his dark brows.
You would choose the Outlander over your own people,
he accuses. Mila's gaze is firm as she heads back to her teepee. If he will not be reasonable, then she will make it clear enough to hurt. I chose him over you, she says. Then she slips back inside. The shadow outside remains, just long enough for the moon to become clear past the moving clouds. In the morning, Mila goes to her uncle, Chief Tahatan. She finds her parents there in his teepee as well, all of them sharing breakfast. Her aunt passes around more bread and wahapi, a sweet mixed berry sauce, while her father is resting broken ankle. He's complaining again, even though it happened over a week ago now.
If you hadn't let the horse buck you off, you wouldn't be hurting, she says sharply now. She's become annoyed with his griping. Or better yet, you can finally admit that you're beyond the years of breaking young stallions. Chetan is the horse master of their tribe and has been since Mila was a little girl, inheriting the position from her great uncle, the former chief's younger brother. Mila knows, however, that Chetan is getting too old to do the harder work. Many years have meant many battles, too, and they've taken their toll on his bones. An idea grows in her mind, and she goes to sit beside her father. She applies the poultice Iota gives Wiea for him before rewrapping his ankle.
Father, she begins, imploring him gently. Perhaps Dean could help you care for the horses.
Chetan eyes her with a frown.
Your husband already has his hands filled with training.
Shota and Dakota can't do it all themselves, and Dean has experience with breaking young horses. She reasons.
Chetan ignores her and hefts himself to his feet without her or his wife's help. He leaves with her mother on his heels, even though she looks back at her daughter apologetically.
You know your father, her eyes say.
Mila frowns at his back, both frustrated and upset. When they're gone, she heaves a sigh. She remains determined, though. She goes to Chief Tahatan next. He sits in his chair of wicker and wood while he smokes his pipe. Her aunt has gone to help the other women harvesting chokeberries and wild onions. Mila will go there soon, but first, she has business here.
Uncle, she says.
He makes a sound of acknowledgement, crossed between a grunt and a groan. He knows what's coming. She kneels at his feet and touches his hand in a sign of humbleness, reverence, and familial love all at once.
Uncle, she repeats. Dean has done nothing but try to please Father, but still, he's being stubborn. Will you talk to him, please?
Tahatan sighs deeply.
You must understand your father, child. The decision you've made affects us all.
I do understand, Uncle. But the truth of it is, none of you have given Dean a chance to prove himself.
His chance is right now,
Tahatan says, his tone more stern.
Have I not been gracious? Did I not allow him to stay and live among us?
Yes, but you continue to judge him in your mind, like everyone else, she says.
The chief remains quiet. She moves to stand before him, holding his gaze directly.
Let us perform the hunkapi.
Hunkapi, the making of relatives. Her people first created the tradition to make peace between Lakota and rival tribes, like the Ri. It can even be used to unite extended families within the tribe, especially in times of marriage. There is no better time for it, she thinks. The chief shakes his head.
Kimimila.
Is he not my husband? She says. In the eyes of our people, this is the joining of two families and accepting an outsider into our tribe. That is exactly what the ceremony is for.
He has no family,
Tahatan snaps.
It is not exactly the tradition.
Then let us make it new, she argues.
Tahatan hesitates. He shakes his head and rubs at his chin in a gesture of long suffering. He thanks the spirits that he never had daughters. While he loves his niece, he has never envied his brother.
I will think on it,
he says. Mila frowns, but she tries her best to accept this, for now. She thanks him respectfully and leans in to kiss his cheek. Tahatan grunts an acknowledgement and watches her go with another shake of his head, despite a small smile. Between her and his sons, they will keep adding years to his life. On her way out of the chief's teepee, she runs into her cousin, Shota. He walks with all the comfortable cockiness of a rooster among his harem.
Good morning, sister,
He greets, even as he playfully pulls at her braid and tosses it into her face. She flicks it away and meets him with an irritated frown. She's in no mood to be teased, especially by him. "You're still a child."
"Oh, ho, hey now."
He chuckles, and he cuts off her path by standing in her way, crossing his arms.
"Watch it. When I become chief, don't think I'll let you talk to me so disrespectfully, my sister."
"Just because you will be chief one day does not make you wise," she says. Her voice is as sharp as the snap of a blackberry vine. "And don't call me sister. You have lost that right." Shota finally becomes serious. He realizes that she means what she says.
"What are you talking about? What have I done?"
he asks more earnestly.
"It's what you haven't done," Mila snaps. "If you were a good leader, you would take your father's words to heart when he accepted my husband into our tribe. If you were my brother, you wouldn't let the men mock him. If you were a man at all, you would do what is right. You would be guiding him right now, instead of letting the others train him." She storms away from him, leaving Shota feeling irritated, but also with an uncomfortable feeling beginning to churn in his gut. Mila moves brusquely through the camp until she reaches the clearing edged by the forest. There, the horses are fenced in. They've been given their food and water for the morning, so they're rather frisky as they clop around and graze. She looks for Mato. Baby is no doubt with Dean today, so the Kyger Mustang keeps to himself underneath a large sycamore tree. His tail flicks when she approaches, and he turns to her with a sound of greeting. She allows her hand to run along his dun-colored coat as she draws closer.
"I need you, my friend," she whispers. She holds his snout, pressing her forehead against his as she squeezes her eyes shut against the burn of frustrated tears. Mato bumps her shoulder with his nose, softly whinnying. She smiles, sniffling, and rubs his cheek.
"Let's go for a ride,"